John Brown's body lies a moldering in the grave, while weep the sons of bondage whom he ventured all to save. But though he sleeps, his life was lost while struggling for the slave. His soul is marching on. Glory, glory, hallelujah. Glory, glory.
Welcome to War of the Rebellion, Stories of the Civil War. I am your host, Leon, and this is a reading of the regimental history under the Maltese Cross, Antietam to Appomattox, the Loyal Uprising in Western Pennsylvania. 1861 to 1865 campaigns 155th Pennsylvania Regiment, narrated by the rank and file. This is episode 40, Company C, the Color Company, by Lieutenant Joseph M. Cargo. Company C may truly be said to have had its birth at the great Union Mass Meeting held on the West Commons, now Park, of Allegheny City. In the latter part of July 1862, when the news of repulse and disasters to the gallant Union Army under General George B. McClellan startled the country and aroused the patriotic element predominating in the young and old of that day and generation, among the recruiting stands opened on that memorable day, when 20,000 people rallied to hear the sad news from the lips of Pennsylvania's own great war governor, Andrew G. Curtin, and other patriotic orators, was John H. Kane of Pittsburgh. His recruiting booth was decorated with the nation's flag, under the folds of which, in United States uniform, a fifer and drummer kept time to the music of the day. During the progress of the meeting, and after each stirring war address, urging enlistment, Captain Kane's quota was rapidly filling, and at last 25 names were enrolled. Besides the writer, who signed his name, he now recalls Comrades Archie N. Ewer, L. E. McPherson, John McKee, Thomas B. Dunn, Thomas Weissman, and Thomas Sprague, as among the gallant comrades with whom, in the next 3 years' service in the field, the writer was destined to become the most intimate. Captain Kane had served 3 months in the 12th Pennsylvania Infantry under Mr. Lincoln's first call for 3 months' troops. He had in that regiment the benefit of the military service in camp and on drills under two efficient and brave soldiers who later died for the Union cause. General Alexander Hayes, who was killed in the Wilderness, major of the regiment, and Colonel James H. Childs, who fell commanding the 4th Pennsylvania Cavalry at Antietam, captain of the company in which Captain Kane had served as a private. Lee Anschutz of Pittsburgh, at the same mass meeting, was recruiting for the 155th and secured a number of volunteers. He had achieved a reputation as an efficient captain in command of a company of home guards in Pittsburgh, known as the Park Rifles. It was drilled by the late James G. Weldon, a sergeant in the Duquesne Grays. The company wore an attractive Zouave uniform in mild imitation of that of the famous Ellsworth Chicago Zouaves. Its gaudy uniform made the organization exceedingly popular in local circles, with its fancy drills and presence at flag presentations, reviews, etc. To the city schoolboys of 15 and 16 years of age, this company was especially attractive. It is needless to add that for the same reason, it became decidedly popular among the schoolgirls and lasses of that day. They frequently attended the fancy drills and gorgeous dress parades daily, had on the Allegheny Commons parade grounds. On these occasions, the young ladies were wont not only to cheer the embryo heroes of the rank and file of Captain Anschutz's crack company with the bewitching smiles, but frequently accompanied the same with wreaths, bouquets, and small flags to empathize their sympathy for the Union and the youthful Zouaves of the Park Rifles. Among the boys, still attending school or just leaving, whom the writer now recalls first meeting at that company, answering to Captain Anschutz's roll calls, were John F. Hunter, Charles F. McKenna, John Mackin, and other boys who graduated the next year into the full-fledged volunteers in the 155th Regiment. None of those named having at the time passed his 17th year. Chaz Siebert, Nicholas Siebert, J.J. Ricketts, and F.C. O'Brien volunteered from this Home Guard company to join the 62nd Regiment Pennsylvania Volunteers, being organized by Colonel Samuel W. Black. Scott C. McDowell, the handsome color bearer of the Park Rifles, still later joined the same regiment and died a soldier's death in the famous Peach Orchard on the field of Gettysburg. Captain Anschutz, at the close of the Great War meeting of July 1862, already mentioned, merged the recruits who had volunteered with him with those already recruited by Captain Kane at the same mass meeting, and thus Company C of the 155th was completed. It organized by the choice of John H. Kane as captain. Lee Anschutz was made first lieutenant, and James S. Palmer was appointed second lieutenant. On organization of the regiment, Captain Kane was commissioned major, and Lieutenant Anschutz was promoted to captain, and James S. Palmer advanced to first lieutenant. John T. Denniston was promoted to the vacant second lieutenancy of the company. A Flag Reminiscence. In October 1862, when the representative of Governor Curtin at Camp McAuley, Sharpsburg, Maryland, on behalf of the state of Pennsylvania, presented the beautiful new United States flag to Colonel Allen, commanding the regiment, assembled on dress parade for the occasion, all will recall the eloquent and patriotic response of the colonel in receiving the colors, particularly pathetic in the recollection now recalled how, at the bugler's call, Captain Anschutz and Color Sergeant Thomas E. Wiseman, of C Company, marched to the front of the regiment, where the colonel handed the spotless new flag to Color Sergeant Wiseman, accompanied with a solemn charge as to the duty of the sergeant to forever defend the honor of the precious emblem entrusted to his custody. How vigorous and soldierly erect both Captain Anschutz and Color Sergeant Wiseman appeared as they proudly marched back to the regimental line with the sacred colors can never be forgotten by those who witnessed the impressive ceremony. What a distressing contrast in scenes and coincidences, and the lives of these two beloved comrades occurred in less than 2 short months, when the regiment received its baptism of fire in the Battle of Fredericksburg, December 13, 1862. It formed with 7 other new Pennsylvania regiments composing Humphrey's division, the Forlorn Hope, or last desperate assault ordered by Burnside and led by the intrepid General A.A. Humphreys against the Stonewall, defended by the Confederate Army on Mary's Heights. 1,750 men killed and wounded in the bayonet charge of this division, occupying not over 15 minutes, tells its own story. Among the killed of Company C were Captain Anschutz and Color Sergeant Thomas E. Wiseman. The beautiful flag was badly riddled and torn by the enemy's missiles. The flagstaff was shattered and broken. Sergeant Wiseman, however, held on to the colors until they were rescued from his dying grasp by Color Corporal Thomas E. Lawson of Company H. Immediately around the prostrate forms of Captain Anschutz and Color Sergeant Wiseman, 4 of the color corporals also lay mortally wounded defending the colors, being Chaz Bardeen, Company F, Frank Thompson, Company I, George W. Bratton, Company E, and Robert Rankin, Company I. Both Captain Anschutz and Color Sergeant Wiseman were buried by comrades of the company in the courthouse yard. The courthouse was one of the largest buildings in the town. Its rooms were used for hospitals. It was overcrowded with wounded and dying. The numerous amputations and operations in progress greatly overworked the large corps of surgeons. The many coffins we had seen piled up on Stafford's Heights, just before the army crossed over the Rappahannock on the pontoons to Fredericksburg, were all needed in this engagement. Private John F. Hunter, of Company C, while serving as the personal mounted orderly of General Humphreys in the great charge on Mary's Heights, was shot in the shoulder and knocked off his horse by the fire of the enemy. It became necessary to amputate his arm at the shoulder joint. Comrade Hunter was so disabled by his terrible wounds that it was long after the close of the war before he was permitted to leave the hospital. Lieutenant James S. Palmer, on the death of Captain Anschutz, assumed command of the company during the remainder of the battle. He was awarded with merited promotion, being commissioned as captain, and Lieutenant Denniston was promoted to First Lieutenant. Orderly Sergeant Augustus H. Heisey, under whose discipline the raw material of the company had been developed into trained soldiers, also received recognition, being advanced to a second lieutenancy. In this capacity, owing to the protracted sickness of Captain Palmer and the absence of Lieutenant Denniston on detailed staff duty for several months, Lieutenant Heisey frequently commanded the company. The casualty lists of Company C, beginning at Mary's Heights, were was followed by the death of Privates Abner Adams and Marion Hartley, who met their fate on the skirmish line on opening the Battle of the Wilderness. Both bodies fell into the enemy's hands and were never recovered. 3 days later, on May 8th, early in the morning, the 5th Corps, with Ayres' Brigade and the 155th in advance, occurred the Battle of Laurel Hill, or Alsop's Farm. As it is often called, Sergeant Joseph M. Shahan, popularly known as 40 in the regiment, was among the first killed. As he had led the company into action, his death cast a gloom over the company. He was much beloved by his superior officers in the ranks of the company for his soldierly, manly qualities. In the same action, Samuel Andrews fell, mortally wounded. After the battle, both these heroes were buried on the battlefield by comrades, who affectionately marked their graves with headboards. The general history with itinerary of the regiment tells the story of the subsequent continuous actions and skirmishing at Spotsylvania, North Anna, and Bethesda Church, and the great flank movement of the Union Army under Grant on its second, quote, on to Richmond, unquote, marches. On June 1st and 2nd, at Bethesda Church, the 9th Corps, under General Burnside, and the 5th Corps, commanded by General Warren, were ordered by Lieutenant General Grant to advance their skirmish line against the enemy and to make constant demonstrations of heavy firing to detain the large corps of General Lee's army from reinforcing the other Confederate corps in the Cold Harbor fortified defenses of Richmond. General Grant had ordered the 2nd Corps under General Hancock and the 6th Corps under General Wright to mass in force assaulting columns to capture the fortified positions held by the enemy. Two successive assaults in force by these determined corps were repulsed with the heaviest loss in officers and men of any similar action of the campaign. General Grant issued a third order to renew the assault, but the order was subsequently countermanded owing to the heavy losses. For 2 days and nights, the advance of this vedette and skirmish work was assigned to Ayres' Brigade, in which the 155th was serving. The exposure to the deadly range of the enemy sharpshooters during this period told upon the list of killed and wounded in the regiment. June 18, 1864, marked a bloody day's work in the career of the regiment. Lieutenant General Grant determined to have all the corps of the army at a certain hour on this day simultaneously attack the outer works of defenses of Petersburg, in hopes of penetrating the lines and capturing the city, before General Lee's army, defending Richmond, could be transferred to the defenses. It was, however, found impossible by reason of the stubborn resistance of the enemy to carry out this intention, and the assaults were made separately by the 5th, 9th, and 6th Corps late in the afternoon. Colonel Ewing, commanding the 155th Regiment, delivered orders to fix bayonets and to charge the Confederate forts in front, and with cheers the men advanced. They first met a direct destructive fire from the defenders of the fort, which, however, did not halt the column until a very heavy enfilading fire of infantry and artillery opened and checked the assaulting column within 30 yards of the enemy's works, when the order to fall back was given. The venerable Captain S.A. McKee, with uplifted sword, leading the assault, fell mortally wounded, with a score of the bravest spirits of the regiment as his companions in death. Color Sergeant Thomas J. Marlin, with the colors in hand pressing to the front, received a painful wound which disabled him. By direction of Colonel Ewing, Color Corporal L.E. McPherson of Company C took Sergeant Marlin's place and charge of the colors during the remainder of the battle, and for the next week's active campaign, after which Sergeant Marlin returned from the hospital to resume his old position. In this day's action, Captain Heisey, commanding Company C, was conspicuous side by side with Captain McKee in leading his men in the advance of the storming column, and was among the last to obey the order to fall back. The charge of the regiment on June 18, 1864, was only equaled in its severity and daring by that of its experience in the famous charge of Humphrey's division on Mary's Heights, December 13, 1862. The 155th can truly assert that its members on this assault on the outer defenses of Petersburg got closer to the enemy's works than did those of any other command engaged in the storming columns on that occasion. The only Union troops actually reaching the enemy's fort on this occasion were a half dozen daring spirits of the 155th Pennsylvania Volunteers, commanded by Sergeant Bill Colner of Company H, who, refusing to fall back, crossed through the deadly fire of the enemy and took shelter in the moat or ditch surrounding the Confederate fort. The fatal range of the enemy's firing was shown as young Rankin of Company I, who exposed himself preparatory to running back to our lines before night would set in, was instantly perforated by a half dozen shots from the enemy's sharpshooters, his body falling back into the moat. The others in the moat laid low until the shades of night, when they escaped by crawling back within our lines, picking their way through the rows of the dead and dying. Both Generals Warren and Griffin at midnight sent field reports to Generals Grant and Meade of this action of the men of the 155th Regiment on reaching the front. Passing from the many other important events so rapidly following in the Siege of Petersburg, we reach Fort Stedman near the end of the Great Siege. At Fort Stedman, March 25, 1865, in front of Petersburg, the enemy during the night performed a daring deed in first capturing our pickets, and next the guard stationed at entrance to the fort. It was a complete surprise, and at first was quite successful. The Confederates, capturing this important fort and turning its guns upon the Union forts adjoining. The victory, however, was of short duration, as General Meade and his corps commanders at once began countermoves, which drove the enemy from Fort Stedman with heavy loss in prisoners and killed and wounded. And driving the enemy back into the Confederate lines under Colonel Ewing, the 155th participated in the action at Hatcher's Run, following the recapture of Fort Stedman, and sustained severe losses. Colonel Ewing received a serious wound in the foot, so disabling him that he turned the command of the regiment over to Major John A. Kline. In this action, Sergeant Thomas C. Sprague, Corporal Thomas Montgomery, and Privates Samuel K. Book and John C. Book were wounded. Memory so crowds one, as the mind is concentrated on those days long gone by, that it is difficult to draw the curtain or tell where to end the narrative. However, as the sketch of the company shows that Company C lost its brave Commander Anschutz in its first battle, it is but proper to state that at Five Forks, its last battle, planned and won by General G.K. Warren, the company lost its last commander, Lieutenant Thomas B. Dunn, who fell mortally wounded in that decisive battle. He had escaped all missiles of the enemy in every battle from Antietam to Five Forks to receive his death at the very end of the campaign. His promotion had been recent, and he had just returned from 15 days' leave of absence to visit Pittsburgh. When marching orders opening Grant's last campaign were issued, Lieutenant Dunn's home was at Perrysville, Allegheny County, where he was deservedly popular. General Pearson, commanding the brigade, knowing the soldierly qualities and record of Lieutenant Dunn, was so grieved on hearing of his wounds that he visited the field hospital and offered Dr. E.C. Kitchen, the regimental surgeon, $1,000 in gold if he could save the life of the brave lieutenant. But alas, it was impossible. April 7th, a burial party laid his remains to rest in the 5th Corps Field Hospital burying ground adjoining the Danville Railroad. In July 1863, Captain James S. Palmer, who was never of robust constitution, broke down under the severe hardships of active campaigning. He remained under treatment at his home in Pittsburgh until August 1863, when he resigned. During the absence on sick leave of Captain Palmer, and until November 1863, Lieutenant John T. Tenniston was the ranking officer and commanded the company, the captaincy being left vacant. Lieutenant Tenniston, by order of the War Department, was, in the fall of 1863, detailed for staff duty, reporting to General Thomas A. Rowley. No more deserving or patriotic officers than Captain Palmer and Lieutenant Denniston were in the Union Army. Both proved themselves fearless soldiers in battle, and chivalrous gentlemen. And chivalrous gentlemen in camp, and their severance from the company occasioned sincere regret. By the resignations, mentioned Lieutenant Heisey, who had long commanded the company, during the absence of Captain Palmer and Lieutenant Denniston, became captain, continuing to hold this rank until mustered out with the regiment. On the resignation of Captain Frank Van Gorder as regimental quartermaster early in the history of the regiment, James B. Palmer of Company C was promoted to regimental quartermaster with the rank of captain. He fulfilled the important duties so satisfactorily that he retained the important position during the entire term of service of the regiment. This sketch cannot end without noticing a somewhat peculiar character in the company, known as Little Johnny Boyd. He was of drawfish size and was a typical Irishman, being quick at repartee, also genial, good-natured, and shrewd. Endowed with no education, he depended upon picking up news and current events of the day from those of a more literary turn. When not drilling and off duty, Johnny, being of sober habits and industriously inclined to earn an honest penny or dollar, secured permission from Colonels Allen, Kane, and Pearson, in turn to enjoy the exclusive franchise of laundrymen for Company C and adjacent companies. His franchise was frequently invaded by Private James Finnegan, a countryman of Boyd's, who was serving in Company D. Great was the fun in camp when these two worthies often indulged in joint discussions over their respective rights and claims to the exclusive franchises as company laundrymen in the 155th Regiment. In battle, Johnny Boyd was full of martial spirit and did his duty on all occasions as fearlessly as did his ancestors at the Battle of the Boyne or at Fontenoy. Among those entitled to credit in action and field hospital service was Albert K. Smith, who, although at times in delicate health, fulfilled the arduous duties of sergeant in the ambulance corps during the campaigns of the regiment. In conclusion, it may be stated that the proudest day in all the history of the dear old regiment was when it stood in line on the occasion of paroling the Confederates of General Gordon's and Longstreet's commands after the surrender at Appomattox, and when we looked without malice into the eyes of the brave Confederates, our opponents on so many hotly contested battlefields, as they cheerlessly stacked their guns and sadly and silently broke ranks and walked away. This paroling scene occurred April 12, 1865. It was a full compensation to those of us who witnessed the solemn ceremony for all our suffering and sacrifices of the 3 years' service. The only regret felt was that all our brave fellow comrades who once stood in our ranks could not be with us on the occasion. To enjoy the glorious end of the campaign, culminating so happily in a restored and reunited country. As the author of the sketch, it would ill become the writer to say much of his own military record as sergeant and orderly sergeant of the company. Assuming command of the company on the fall of Lieutenant Dunn in the Battle of Five Forks, but the writer thinks he may be excused for alluding to the fact that General Lee's sudden notion to accept General Grant's terms to surrender the Confederate Army at Appomattox seriously interfered with the writer's promotion and commission as a second lieutenant. Major Kline, commanding the 155th at Five Forks, had forwarded a recommendation after the battle of the writer's name for promotion to the vacant second lieutenancy, and the same was forwarded, approved by General Pearson, commanding the brigade. The recommendation, in due time, reached the War Department at Washington, and the commission was finally made out. The commission as lieutenant was forwarded to the writer, but arrived too late for his actual muster into the service with the rank, as at Camp Copeland, Pittsburgh, he was paid off and mustered out with his company on June 2, 1865, as orderly sergeant. Uncle Sam, however, in the piping times of peace, 12 years after the close of the Civil War, corrected this injustice, and upon due investigation made handsome amends, and directed the issue of a commission as second lieutenant and the muster in of the writer to that rank awarded the additional pay and emolument, as will officially appear by a true copy of special order in the case issued by the War Department. Copy: Special Order Number 193, Headquarters of the Army Adjutant General's Office, Washington, August 20th, 1887. Extract 1. By direction of the Acting Secretary of War, under the Act approved February 3rd, 1887, to complete his record, the discharge of First Sergeant Joseph M. Cargo, Company C, 155th Pennsylvania, Infantry Volunteers, May 11, 1865, and his muster into service as Second Lieutenant, same with Company and Regiment, May 12, 1865, is amended to take effect April 1, 1865, and he is mustered for pay in the advance grade during the period embraced between the aforesaid dates. By command of Lieutenant General Sheridan, R.C. Drun, Adjutant General, Official, J.C. Kelton, Assistant Adjutant General. Record, Enrollment, Casualties, etc., Company C. Killed, and died of wounds. Captain Lee Anschutz, killed at Fredericksburg, Virginia, December 13, 1862. Lieutenant Thomas B. Dunn, died April 3, 1865, of wounds received at Five Forks, Virginia, April 1, 1865. Color Sergeant Thomas E. Weissman, died of wounds received at Fredericksburg, Virginia, December 13, 1862. Sergeant Joseph Shawhan, killed at Laurel Hill, Virginia, May 8, 1864. Corporal Cyrus L. Jameson, killed at Five Forks, Virginia, April 1, 1865. Corporal Anthony Thresher, died of wounds received at Wilderness, Virginia, May 5, 1864. Private Samuel Andrews, killed at Laurel Hill, Virginia, May 9, 1864. Private Abner J. Adams, killed in Wilderness, Virginia, May 5, 1864. Private Robert F. Campbell, died of wounds received August 19, 1864. Private Marion Hartley, killed in Wilderness, Virginia, May 5, 1864. Private William H. Linhart, killed at Petersburg, Virginia, June 18, 1864. Private Philip Perry, killed at Petersburg, Virginia, June 18, 1864. Private George W. Plow, killed at Petersburg, Virginia, June 18, 1864. Private John Shue, died of wounds received at Hatcher's Run, Virginia, October 27, 1864. Died of disease. Corporal Edwin D. Carpenter, died December 29, 1862. Private Andrew B. Christie, died at Baltimore, Maryland, June 28, 1864. Private Joseph Funiak, died at Washington, D.C., January 1, 1863. Private Michael Sullivan, died June 12, 1864. Wounded in action. Sergeant Thomas C. Sprague, Hatcher's Run, Virginia, March 25, 1865. Sergeant Philip A. Drain, Wilderness, Virginia, May 5, 1864. Corporal Archibald N. Ewer, Peebles Farm, Virginia, September 30, 1864. Corporal Thomas Montgomery, Hatcher's Run, Virginia, March 25, 1865. Private Robert Andrew, Wilderness, Virginia, May 5, 1864. Private Joseph Bowers, Wilderness, Virginia, May 5, 1864. Private Samuel K. Boak, Hatcher's Run, Virginia, March 25, 1865. Private James M. Clark, Fredericksburg, Virginia, December 13, 1862. Private Williamson Christie, discharged for wounds, April 17, 1865. Private John F. Hunter, Fredericksburg, Virginia, December 13, 1862. Private David W. McCombs, discharged for wounds, date unknown. Private James W. McCandless, discharged for wounds, date unknown. Private William H. Showalter, Fredericksburg, Virginia, December 13, 1862. Private Martin F. Stewart, with 62nd Pennsylvania Volunteers, never joined company. Private James Webb, Laurel Hill, Virginia, May 8, 1864, loss of leg. Private John C. Wick, Hatcher's Run, Virginia, March 25, 1865. Recapitulation. Total enrollment, 148. Killed and died of wounds, 13. Died of disease, 4. Discharged on account of wounds and disabilities, 42. Transferred to Veteran Reserve Corps, 14. Officers resigned, 3. Transferred to other organizations, 20. Dishonorably discharged, 3. Not on muster out rolls, 8. Never joined company, 5. Deserted, 11. Mustered out with regiment, 25. Wounded in action, 16. And all right, there we go. I'm just going to try and work through these company sketches twice a week now. I can't guarantee it, but I'm going to try. I'm releasing Company D's will come out on Saturday. So enjoy this nice surprise today, and then you'll have Company D's out on Saturday. Not a whole lot to talk about with these. I'm just reading through them. They're pretty interesting. Some of it is stories we've already heard just from the perspective of the person who was there and involved. So that's really interesting, really enjoyable. Also releasing today, it is Wednesday, the 17th of August. We will have I'm finally home. No longer moving, no longer going anywhere. I also have all of my merch, so later this week, probably on Saturday, I will release pictures up on the website to show you what they look like. And they look great, so I hope you guys like them. And then I'll actually post the actual link to where you can pick any of that stuff up. So, all right, friends, I will see you in the next one. Bye-bye.
Old John Brown's body lies a-moldering in the grave, while weep the sons of bondage whom he ventured all to save. But though he sleeps, his life was lost while struggling for the slave. His soul is marching on. Glory, glory, hallelujah. Glory, glory, hallelujah. Hallelujah, for his soul is marching on. John Brown was a hero, undaunted, true, and brave. And Kansas knew his valor when he fought her rights to save. And now, though the grass grows green above his grave, his soul is marching on. Glory, glory, hallelujah. Glory, glory, hallelujah. Hallelujah, for his soul is marching on. He captured Harper's Ferry with his 19 men so few, and frightened old Virginny till she trembled through and through. They hung him for a traitor, themselves a traitorous crew, but his soul is marching on. Glory, glory, hallelujah. Glory, glory, hallelujah. Glory, glory, hallelujah. For his soul marching on. John Brown was John the Baptist of the Christ we are to see. Christ who of the bondman shall the liberator be. And soon throughout the sunny south the slaves shall all be free, for his soul is marching on. Glory, glory, hallelujah. Glory, glory, hallelujah. Glory, glory, hallelujah. For his soul is marching on. That he heralded, he looked from heaven to view on the army of heaven with its flag red, white, and blue. And heaven shall sing with anthems or the deed they mean to do, for a soul is marching on. Of freedom, then strike while strike ye may, the death blow of oppression in a better time and way. The dawn of old John Brown has brightened in the day, and his soul is marching on. Glory, glory, hallelujah. Soul.